There will be three opportunities to hear a dialogue between an Orthodox Israeli settler and a Palestinian activist as they tell their personal stories and of their efforts to build a better future. Rabbi Hanan Schlesinger and Shadi Abu Awad of Roots come with no ready peace plans in hand, but only with the conviction that human understanding and trust will be the prerequisites for lasting justice, freedom, and peace on that tiny sliver of land that they both call home. Rabbi Hanan and Shadi Abu Awad will be speaking at three locations in the capital region tonight through Wednesday. They're going to be at Congregation Ahav Shalom in Albany tonight at 7 o'clock, at Skidmore College tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and at the Islamic Center of the Capital Region on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. But before all that happens, they're with us this morning, and we welcome them to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you both here.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Rabbi, tell us how this all happened, how this began, and how many years ago.
Well, it was 6 years ago. Where I live, probably 90% of the population is Palestinian, something like 10% is Israeli. But I'd never, ever met a Palestinian for the 33 years that I'd lived there. We live completely separately, no connection between the two sides. Everything is different. Everything is, you could say, segregated. Mm-hmm. And I had my stereotypes and I had my prejudices and I especially had my fears. But a little incident happened, if I can tell you a one-minute story.
Please do.
That opened my eyes to the need to meet my neighbors. So I was driving my car. I had two Protestant pastors who were guests of mine from the U.S., and I was showing them around everything we built and established there in the land. This is the West Bank, also called Judea and Samaria, Palestine, Israel. We're driving around. I'm showing them how the Jewish people have returned to our land after 2,000 years of exile. And I picked up a hitchhiker. Then I picked up another one. When the second hitchhiker got out of the car, one of my guests, pastors, they said to me, Hanan, that was so beautiful you picked up hitchhikers. Wow, you taught us a lesson in Jewish ethics. No one does it in Texas where we come from. So I said, look, it's not just me. We all pick up hitchhikers around here. And like everyone else, I do my best to pick up every person who puts out his finger for a ride. And by the time I finished that sentence, I realized that I was lying. I was lying to my guests, and even worse, I was lying to myself. Because I don't pick up every person who puts out his finger. I pick up only Jews, only Israelis. And how did I say that I pick up every person? I realized that there are persons out there that aren't persons in my consciousness. They don't register for me. So then I took upon myself to try and meet my neighbors. And the rest of the story is long.
Okay. So the idea of Roots and bringing this to various communities and talking about it. So the idea for that came how, and how you found your partner who is in the studio with us.
So because of that incident, I began to try to meet Palestinians, and eventually I was invited to a gathering, something that never happens where we come from, Israelis and Palestinians talking to each other. And at that event, I, for the first time in my life, met Palestinians, and I heard about a people. I heard about a national narrative that I'd never come across, even though it was right in front of my eyes. And that was the first event that brought about the foundation of Roots, the creation of Roots, the Israeli-Palestinian grassroots initiative for understanding nonviolence and transformations with Shadi's father and Shadi's uncle were there then. And we began to meet local Israelis and local Palestinians, and basically to tell stories. Not to prove that we're right and they're wrong, but to listen to their story and tell our story. And it turns out that the Palestinian story and the Israeli story contradict each other. Our identities are mutually exclusive. To hear their story is like a dagger in my heart. And for them to hear my story of return to the land of Israel after 2,000 years of exile is a dagger in their heart. We gradually began to see how our identities are built upon the nullification of the side's identity. And what we have to do is begin to fit two truths into one heart. And that's the hardest thing in the world.
Shadi, how were you impacted by this in both your uncle and your father having these conversations? So you were sort of brought up with that.
Okay, so I was the last one who joined the peace work and the organization. I was the one who's against that. I was the one who's against this kind of talk, this kind of work, until I came to a conclusion that our problem is not with the human being. Our problem is not with the Jewish people. Our problem is with the occupation. Our problem is with the soldier I see, is with the soldier who shoot my uncle, is with the one who shoot my brother. So why I am blaming the whole society for that soldier's fault, for that soldier's decision? So I say that why I can't just stick to my first identity as a human being and keep fighting for my rights non-violently with my partner, the one who also admit my rights. Why I'm fighting him and he's fighting me, and we both losing our rights with using violence toward each other under the name of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, instead of be together, one voice, fighting non-violently against this conflict and occupation that taking our rights from living in dignity, in equality, in justice in that land. So I joined Roots because I find in Roots and in the work that they are doing the real meaning of peace, not the meaning of peace that unfortunately after all that years of long-term conflict, people just change the definition of peace in their minds. So it become giving up, normalization, weak people, giving rights. This is what peace means now back home in Palestine.
Before you joined Roots and your uncle was involved in it and your father was involved in it, what kind of conversations would you have? What kind of conversations would they have with you?
Okay, so the conversation I have, how come you can do this?
Right.
So the answer I get, why not? What's your problem with this person? Why you cannot go and talk to a human being? How come you want to achieve your rights? What's the way you want to use? So I tell them, I don't know. I just don't want to talk to them, don't want to meet them after everything they did to us, after everything we've been through. And that's the only answer I could give. But they were not trying to push me to do anything because... And that's right, because now I understand why they didn't do that. It's because if they would force me and push me to do that, I will never think about it and never accept it.
Did you see that they had accomplished something in the work that they had done?
We did, and they did.
Yes.
Because we've been through many things before even peace. We've been through political positions, through the first Palestinian Rising Up Intifada, but with the peace work we achieve one thing, which is having a friend instead of having an enemy, which is the same person in this house who was thinking how he can get rid of me and kill me. Now he's my friend that beside me calling for my rights the same way I'm calling for his rights. So changing an enemy to a friend, that's the best and the most value thing you can achieve in our work.
Rabbi Hanan, I mentioned in the introduction that you're going to be doing a trio of events throughout the capital region. How do these events usually work out and give an idea of what people can expect in the conversation that the two of you have?
Shadi and I both speak for about half an hour about our personal stories, about our discovery of the existence of the other and his humanity. That's the micro. We also talk about the macro, how our work is affecting thousands of people and how we hope that we are providing the human foundation for a future peace settlement between Israelis and Palestinians. So we each speak half an hour. We show two short videos, very short, less than 5 minutes of our work. And then there's a long question and answer session. Depending on who the audience is, people, although they love our stories and they're really riveted, sometimes there's opposition. There are maybe Israelis or Palestinians in the audience who can't believe the good things we're saying about the other side. Mm-hmm. They can't believe the dream of reconciliation may come true. Sometimes people are offended when we talk about the bad that our side is doing. They can't accept that our side is doing any bad, whether our sides mean the Israeli side or the Palestinian side. There are hard questions. There are discussions. And very often, you see people walking out and saying, wow, I have to think about that. That's something I've never, ever, ever heard.
And that's what you want, right? Ultimately, that's what you want, people to at least think.
We want people to be challenged, to think, to see that not only their side is right, but the other side may be right as well. And we have to work together to achieve reconciliation. It's also very important for us to explain that the political situation in Israel-Palestine is bad, is unjust, it's causing death and suffering. and there has to be a political solution, but we won't ever reach a political solution until we first do the people-to-people work of creating recognition and trust and empathy in place of fear and hate and anger.
That seems, when we say it, it seems easy and it sounds easy, and yet it's not.
It's the hardest thing in the world.
Right. Because of what you were just saying, of having these notions, and this is what generations before you have come to this. So to break out of that takes a lot of internal work, which you both have done.
Exactly.
So how do you create a roadmap, if you will, for people to do that internal work themselves?
There's no roadmap. Everyone does it differently. Some people are more ready for it than others, but for us in Roots, the key is people-to-people contact in the right setting. We really can't explain how we created the right setting, but we did. From the very beginning, we understood that our place is not to prove that we're right and you're wrong. It's not to scream and yell and show how bad you are. Our job is two things that are two sides of the same coin, which is to tell stories and to listen to stories. To tell the story of our identity proudly, honestly, and then to listen after the other side has listened to us. Listen when they tell their story. And each side's story contradicts the other side. It's like a dagger in the heart to listen to them. But that's exactly what we have to do to fit two truths into one heart and eventually into one land.
Is it ever discouraging when the two of you have a conversation and you are talking and telling your stories, and when people do leave and they are still very, very set in what it is? Do you feel that you haven't gotten through, or that there isn't even that glimmer that they're listening to what the overall message of the evening was?
No, I don't, because I already know and expect that that will happen. And the people will do that, and the people will leave with not getting
right.
it, because it's not easy.
I'm assuming, though, if people come, just by virtue of walking through the door, that they have some want to open themselves up to that discussion.
It depends if you're talking about our work on the ground over there or you're talking about our work in the U.S. when we come and speak.
Primarily here in the U.S.
So here in the U.S.
I mean these events. I mean, I would think people who come to the events over the next three evenings.
So not always. For example, we speak at synagogues in addition to churches and mosques and universities. When we speak in synagogues, very often, because of my rabbinical connections, will be for a whole Sabbath, 24 hours in the same synagogue. And some of the activities, people come not because they want to. That's part of their community. They come to what their community is doing. And there will be people who get very angry and very offended by hearing, again, that there's any truth and legitimacy on the other side, on the Palestinian side.
When you think about that idea of truth, do the two of you, I guess I'll ask you each this, do you both... Is it always a work in progress? Is it always working on keeping that truth very open?
A lot of people assume that, for example, Shadi and I, we're cordial and we love each other and we're friends and we're partners, but they assume there's still deep disagreements between us. And the truth is, I don't really see those disagreements. I think that I... as much as possible, understand, empathize with, and accept the Palestinian narrative, and at the same time that I accept and empathize with and love and embrace my narrative. They're both true. There can be, and there are, two conflicting perspectives that are true at the same time. Just give you an example. 1948 was the War of Independence for the Jewish people, and it was the Nakba, the tragedy for the Palestinian people, and it's both those things at the same time.
Hmm.
Is it a work in progress? So personally...
And that's what I mean.
Yeah,
personally,
a
work in progress. That even something that somebody can say and you think to yourself, they can say in the audience and you think, okay.
This is now 6 years I've been doing this work. I would say at the beginning, I was undergoing great emotional turmoil every day, and I was changing, and I was considering and being challenged, and it was painful, and I was suffering nausea from the conflicts inside me, and I was crying. These days, the changes and the developments and the nausea and the pain are much less because I've heard and have accepted a good deal of the whole stories.
You feel the same way?
I do, but I also, I've been through all that, and you have faced many opinions, many things that will lead you to think, okay, maybe I should change my mind. Maybe I should just not feel that way, not think that way. But the biggest and the strongest reason that will help me to get over all of that and just stay calm and process it in my mind, which is the reason that I'm doing this work, which is bringing a better future for my next generation and my family back home.
Where is home?
Huh?
Where is home?
Home is Palestine.
Okay. And that's your full-time home?
Yes, that's my home.
So does it ever, do you become a, do you become a spokesperson, if you will, when you're at home, of people know the work that you do and are interested or angered by what you do?
Okay, so I always talk about this even when I'm back home. So most of the people interested in proving that I'm doing the wrong thing. So trying to blame me and tell me that you're doing the wrong thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But and how do you get over that?
It's sounds hard thing, but I would say it's really easy thing because I understand why they say that. So I get over that with just explaining to them that with what I'm doing, I'm just being a human being calling for full rights as any other Palestinian without using violence.
It would seem to me that it would be difficult, that more difficult, if you are in an anonymous church basement or a hall at a college, that it would be different than talking to people who you grew up with, who you know, who you love, who you have shared life with for a long period of time.
It's harder to talk to the people I lived with and my neighbors.
Absolutely.
Yes, than talking to the people in the
I
church
would think
or
so.
Anyway. Yes,
I would
that's
think so.
True, because when I talk to my people, I feel the pain. Because
yeah.
I have the same pain. I feel where the when they talk from their emotions, and I feel it from their anger, from their history of suffering, which is I feel it, I have it, and it's not easy feeling, and I cannot get rid of it. Even that I'm a peace activist, but I'm using it as a reason to push me to bring change, that I don't want anymore to have and to go through what I've been through, and this is what I'm trying to convince them to do, which is to use it as a reason to bring change for a future not only based in peace, based in dignity and for rights and equality. So that means in what we are doing, I am pro-Palestinians. I'm not. I didn't stop being pro-Palestinian. I'm one of them. I'm even calling for full rights for myself and my people and everyone. But as a human being, treating other people as a human being and trying to find a way how we can have justice and life together there, because the fact is nobody's going anywhere. The Palestinians are not going anywhere. We are not going anywhere. We didn't come from anywhere. We were there and we will stay there. The Israeli will not go anywhere. So it's instead I'm trying with my people to get over the emotions and deal with facts.
Right. Two final questions. Rabbi Hanan, first of all, where is home for you?
I live in a town called Alon Shvut, a settlement of about 800 families. And where I live, my neighbors call it Israel, specifically Judea and Samaria of Israel, at the same time that the Palestinians who live a kilometer away call it Palestine, the West Bank of Palestine. It's both at the same time.
So I asked Shadi that question, and I guess obviously that impacts with you as well. I assume that it's for the people that are your family and your friends and the people that you serve as a rabbi are also are the people that you have the deepest connection with this work
through.
Yeah, our work is local. Our main job is not to convince people around the world, it's to convince local people to see a human being with the other neighbors. And it is difficult, just like Shadi said, because people have their suffering and their pain and their strong national narrative that it's our land and it's not theirs. We're legitimate and they're not legitimate. And to say that we're legitimate, but they are also, the Palestinians are also, is very, very challenging to people. Let me just add that I often say that the closer you are, the lesser you see.
Mm.
If you're far away, you can see things rationally because you're not blinded by pain and by suffering and by hate. Shadi just said the same thing. But for local people, we have to help them to overcome these psychological barriers. How do we do it? I can't convince my neighbors, but meeting Shadi can't convince them. Nothing I can say. It just gets into political argument. But when they meet a real Palestinian, he turns out to be a human being and have a real story, and he has a claim that they have to listen to, then things begin to change.
So, final question, which you just partially answered, but for both of you, is how do you, have you seen, are you optimistic? I mean, by what you have seen and the results that you have seen as the results of your talks, the results of your work on the ground, your results of your work across the country and the world, are you optimistic?
There's no reason to be optimistic. If you look at things rationally, things are bad, they're getting worse, both as far as the lack of people-to-people contact and as far as politics go on the macro level. But we are creating hope where there's no hope. Mm. And we're doing that through taking responsibility. So I don't know what the chances of bringing reconciliation are in my lifetime, but I know I have a responsibility to do what can be done. And when I take that responsibility, I see little glimmers of progress. I see on the micro level that people are being transformed, Palestinians and Israelis, to accept the other side. And I know that if we can scale up that micro 1,000-fold, then there'll be the beginning of a real light at the end of the tunnel.
Johnny?
I can't say I'm optimistic about it, because if I will feel and say that I'm optimistic, that means if I will not see it with my own eyes in my lifetime, I will be disappointed. So I'm not optimistic, but I have something else, which is I do believe, and I'm sure that I'm doing the right thing. So I just believe in what I'm doing. I'm not really optimistic because I know it's going to take long, long time. I hope not, but this is the truth and the fact. So I also don't hope.
Really?
I don't hope, because to hope for something, you hope that this will happen.
But you realize what you're doing is hopeful.
I know. People say I give them hope. But yeah. Me personally, I don't talk about hope. Because if you talk about hope, that I hope this will happen and one day will come, I am sure, 100%, after all that years, after being through everything in this conflict, that this is the only way, and this is the path that's going to lead us to a future solution. So instead of hoping, I'm sure that this day will come. I just don't know when.
Rabbi Hanan and Shadi Abu Awad will be speaking at three locations in the capital region tonight through Wednesday. We welcome let me give you the three locations, and then go to their website, and you can find out more. It's friendsofroots.net, friendsofroots.net. But here is the schedule. Tonight at Congregation Ohav Shalom on Crumkill Road in Albany, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, and Wednesday back in Albany at the Islamic Center of the Capital Region, again at 7 o'clock. You can see the full schedule on our website, or at friendsofroots.net, friendsofroots.net. Rabbi Hanan and Shadi, I thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure and privilege to speak to you both. And
thank you.
Best of luck in your good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.